All I know is a Hootie and a Blowfish. It'd probably be scarier if you're in Walmart.
Welcome to the Oddity Archive with Evan and David.
All right, everybody, quick disclaimer here before we jump into the episode. What you just heard in the cold open was what 30 minutes of my audio file sounded like, high-pitched and crackly, and so that became completely unusable. So we are in the process of re-recording the section that was, but we're doing it at a much later date, probably 3 weeks later from when we originally recorded. So we got through the portion of seeing the Flatwoods Monster, and then we pick back up when we were discussing our theories about the case. And so the section in between that is what we're recording tonight. And I just want to give everybody a heads up. If the flow seems a little bit off in those sections, that's what's going on. All right, everybody, enjoy. I'm just now realizing I did not figure out like an opening sentence to read, so we'll just have to pull something from the episode. And it could also open with you just singing "I'm a nut nut" about putt putt.
I can almost remember the entire putt putt jingle.
Go for it.
What I remember it as is there's this orange cartoon ball.
I remember that.
And for those who haven't been to putt putt, when you start off, you pick a colored ball. I think it's like red, blue, yellow, green.
Yeah.
And if you got a hole in one, there's like this stoplight over where you got your putter. And if your ball color was lit when you got a hole in one, you got a scratcher card. Great for kids. And I think you get a prize. It'd be like a $1 slice of pizza, 20 game room tokens, something like that.
Okay.
But you're only allowed to get one prize per round of 18 holes. And to make sure you didn't double up, they would give you an orange ball to replace the one that you made the hole-in-one with. Because there's no orange ball on the stoplight. So that was your prize round, right? You're out. And I know plenty of kids who would like get a hole-in-one and then just like sit there and stare at the light and wait for it to change and then go up with whatever color and just illuminate it for them to get a prize.
Gaming the putt-putt system.
Big brain kid system, right? Anyway, so the orange ball, he's like anthropomorphic.
I remember the commercials. I don't remember the jingle.
I think he had like a yellow hat, little twig arms, legs and shoes. And the song, I believe, was "I'm a nut nut about putt putt. Don't even try and get in my way." And I think they just kind of looped that for like 30 seconds until the spot was done.
You just remembered that from memory? That's incredible.
I'm just glad that's what stuck and not like the 4 years of Spanish that I took.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
That putt-putt that we used to go to is closed now.
I know. That made me super sad. They had bumper boats and the go-karts.
Yeah.
But it was in kind of a weird part of town.
Yeah.
Which is why your parents were probably mostly concerned. And I was like, guess where we're going? We're going to skip class.
We're going to putt-putt on the other side of the tracks.
When we come back, we're going to have matching tattoos of an orange ball. Oh, putt-putt for the fun of it was another.
Okay, putt-putt for the fun of it. I remember that for sure. Are you listening to it right now?
This is like way back before our. This is like 1970s.
The nut-nut about putt-putt was from the 70s?
No, the putt-putt for the fun of it.
Oh.
Maybe I just put like putt-putt commercial 90s. Here's the putt-putt golf and games from Wayne, Indiana. That's promising. Oh. So he does have shorts. That part I didn't remember. And they did this one in Wayne, Indiana. Looks like it also has the, like you remember from ours, like the waterfall with the...
with the elephant?
Hippopotamus. Oh, an elephant I think was there too.
Yeah.
All right. Somehow playing that commercial started to like crash my computer. So.
Oh, God. Well, did you get the jingle right?
I think that may have been like 2000s.
Okay.
Just opening YouTube in addition to recording software and video streaming, it started to melt my computer.
Okay. Yeah, I just posted a picture of my state-of-the-art recording setup on Instagram. So if we ever end up pulling in a few dollars from this thing, the first purchases are going to be a new editing rig.
Yeah.
And something better than a 12-year-old Chromebook for me.
Well, we got to start small, and you know, we'll get there. Well, we did the first one here in the room, but even hearing like the original episode, I'm just like, oh, I just need to go back and clean this thing up. But of course, that's like, I think that's the most popular one we have is Dyatlov, right?
So it was for the longest time, but now our boy John Teeter,
okay,
has been telling all his time travelers about it. That's now our number one episode.
Did something happen where he came back to relevance, or just he's a staple hit?
I think he's just a popular topic. I don't know.
Okay.
I really debated even doing that because it's like a fun internet story more so than like a real unsolved case.
Right.
But hey, I'm glad
whatever, yeah, whatever gets people to click
has
play.
The most listens of any episode. Yeah. All right. Well, we can just roll into this episode.
And this whole episode you told me was about Putt-Putt, right?
Yeah. We're doing the Putt-Putt monster.
The cryptid orange ball.
Somehow I'm going to work a description of the Putt-Putt mascot into our next cryptid quiz episode and see if you catch it or not. Yeah. Which we'll definitely be revisiting that episode type. And we're going to call it Real Cryptid or Poorly Scripted.
There'll be some kind of jingle to go along with it. I think
that had a real Doug theme to it.
That was basically just Doug.
Also based in Richmond, Virginia.
Let's try it. What is Skeeter?
Skeeter.
A guy named Skeeter who was blue. Yeah, it's a weird show, but it was based in Richmond, right? Like, I think the mall was based on Cloverleaf. That's also closed down and also right by that Putt-Putt. Anyone listening from outside of our area is like, what are they talking about?
That's been torn down. The cartoon Doug, I think loosely based on Richmond.
That's what I've heard, yeah.
Yeah.
And Skeeter was loosely based on King Pump, I've heard. Or Pump King. King comma pump.
King comma. They call me the pump. The pump king.
Anyway.
Yeah. So we'll definitely be revisiting that type of episode. Well, I think we'll save like overall season thoughts for episode 10. But we've definitely been trying out some new types of episodes this season.
Yeah.
But tonight is a return to form for us. We're going to get back to just a good old cryptid monster alien encounter.
Sweet.
I think
it's
I already said it.
It's been a while. Sorry. Since I heard about cryptids.
Who is that?
Stained, I think.
Stained?
STAIND.
Yeah. I think you're right.
Think roll,
it's been a while.
Since I said I'm sorry. Just always a good time for a Stained reference.
Working those lyrics throughout the episode. Like, look up the lyrics to that song and just throw some lines in here and there.
Yeah, I like that you think people are gonna know any lines other than just the chorus.
That's why I want you to do it, because nobody will catch any of it.
It's a deep cut for the Stained fans out there. This whole episode is just dedicated to you guys. Really keeping the show alive is the Stained crowd.
I'm gonna post the episode on our Stained.
Yeah. So if we do a song on this one, maybe it's in the vein of Stained.
In the vein of Stained.
In the vein of Stained.
It's been a while. What is the next lyric? Since I
said I'm sorry, but I think, oh yeah, since I could hold my head up high. That was that era though where all the deep male singers had that, like,
oh yeah. I'm 6 feet from the edge and I'm thinking
women wrong me again, and it's definitely not because of me.
So, Flatwoods Monster. Like I said, we're getting back to a good old monster story.
Yeah.
This one gives really strong Stranger Things vibes.
Okay. Timely, because I think, isn't that, that's wrapping up?
Yeah, it like just ended.
Oh, okay.
I've not watched the final season yet. I was waiting for it all to come out, and then I'm going to start my Netflix subscription, watch it all, and then cancel it within a month.
That's the way to do it.
That's the way to do streaming services.
Yeah, you got
to
pick one.
Pick your show.
Binge your show, and yeah, then get out.
Turn it off. Turn the next one on.
It's no spoilers, but I heard there's already people pushing for him to release... Or what's the name of the brothers who made it?
I don't even.
Duffer Brothers? I don't know. But they're pushing for like whatever their original cut was or something. So it's like the Snyder cut thing is already, I've seen.
The Snyder cut.
Similar kind of deal, yeah.
What?
Anyway.
I don't even know how we got to Zack Snyder. So Flatwoods Monster. This story... I've got all my notes written down for this one. We're going to go through this. This is from 1952. And just right off the top, it felt like researching this episode was more like trying to decipher a long telephone game, more so than it was just trying to find facts about the case. Because like every single detail that you see presented about this case, you'll see it somewhere else and it's totally different. Mm-hmm. And so I did my best to just stick to the facts.
Okay.
But I'll try and point out as we go through this story, like where things are debatable.
Did you do that by cross-referencing stories, or there is just some stuff that's indisputable fact and then the stories kind of work here and there, their own take on it around it?
The stuff I'm going to present is, as best I can tell, fact. Okay. And if it's not, I'm going to tell you and kind of give you multiple sides to what's going on.
Okay, cool.
Just so you have all of the information so you can tell me if this was real or not at the end of it.
Okay.
Well, like I said, we're going to 1952. I'm going to take you to Flatwoods, West Virginia. We are about a 2-hour drive from Point Pleasant, West Virginia, which is home of the Mothman.
Oh, okay.
So West Virginia is a cryptid loving state. Also, the Flatwoods Monster we talked about last episode during the cryptid quiz. I may or may not have already said that.
I mean, before our in the pre-show, but yeah. So he was one of the
real ones.
Cryptid or poorly scripted tests.
Yeah, I can't remember if you got it right or wrong. I remember you
right
got
before
like,
the turn where I just lost six straight or whatever.
Yeah, you went on a terrible losing streak and you have to eat grape nuts as a result. But I'm waiting for that video to be posted to Instagram.
I'll live stream myself doing almost anything.
Just no lower half male nudity.
Yeah, it's got to be waist up. Otherwise, we're good. Grape nuts. Yeah, no problem.
You ain't seeing the pumpkins, grape nuts.
No, you ain't. That's private. It's private for me.
So Flatwoods, West Virginia, small town.
2 hours from the Mothman's territory.
2 hours from Mothman. If you look at West Virginia on a map and you just like put your finger right in the middle of West Virginia.
That's me placing my finger right on the map.
That's about where Flatwoods is. It's dead center, the belly button of West Virginia.
I don't like that word.
It's not a big town. I pulled up some of the census data. So 1940, the decade before, population 308. 1950, 2 years before the incident, 288. And then the census just 5 years ago, 2020, the census was 264. So it's been going down a little bit, but, you know, not super significantly, but small town.
Is it super rural or like a little cluster in the middle of like a valley kind of deal?
Yeah, that.
For people not from our area, if you go into the mountains, you'll be seeing a whole lot of nothing. And then this valley where it just has this little pocket of some kind of community that's doing their thing.
Yeah. And then you'll go back into a whole bunch of nothing and then pop into another town, maybe an hour down the road.
Yep.
So yeah, this is one of those towns. Now, again, we're 1952 and sort of set the zeitgeist of what was going on back then. Mm-hmm. So a lot of UFO stuff is just happening in the country at this time.
Okay. Meaning around 1952.
Yeah, 1952, early 50s. 5 years before 1947, there was so much UFO activity. It's been dubbed the Summer of Saucers.
Nice.
1947, that's when the Roswell incident happened, sort of kicked things off.
I feel like a lot of classic alien pictures and stories kind of came from like around that time.
Yeah. Yeah. So Roswell 1947, that's just one of many flying saucer encounters in the late 40s.
Yeah.
Moving into the 50s, you had a Mount Hope UFO sighting 1950. You had 1952, there's a Washington DC UFO sighting. So people know about UFOs. They know about flying saucers. They have probably seen a movie or a comic book or some sort of media involving aliens and that type of thing. Sci-fi is like becoming a genre of entertainment.
Is there a reason this time became such a Yeti hotbed for UFO sightings? Or like, I imagine just aircraft travel probably became more of a thing. So people started seeing stuff in the sky moving or
more air travel. One theory that I have about it, if it's not UFOs and aliens, mm-hmm. one potential explanation that is of this world would be that jet engine technology was up and coming at that time. Yeah. And so the government was probably working on some top secret aircraft projects, maybe testing them out, things of that nature, I think.
Yeah, gotcha.
Because if you've never seen a jet engine flying at Mach speed and then one flies over your head, you're...
And there's a sonic boom. You're going to be like, holy...
That is from another world.
Yeah.
So at this time in the early 50s, people know about this stuff.
Yeah.
This isn't like a spontaneous thing and people are going to be like, what do you mean? You saw what? Like if you say I saw a flying saucer, people are going to know, have a general idea of what you're talking about.
Yeah.
So enough setting the scene. We're going to September 12th, 1952, Flatwoods, West Virginia. So we're in Flatwoods. That is part of Braxton County, West Virginia.
Okay.
And this is, let me get a time for you, because we're going back to all of the classics today. I sent you no context photos.
You did. They're back. It's good to be back.
And no context videos. I don't know if you listen to those videos or not, but.
I haven't, but I can play them and then also play them into the mic a bit so we all get a taste, if that works.
Yeah, that'll work. So we're going...
The thumbnails were great, though. I am very excited.
We are going... Hold on. Where is my note here? Did I not put that note in here? I'm going to be very upset if I didn't put a note about this in here.
And everything I can't remember, as messed up as it all may seem, the consequences that I've rendered, I've gone and messed things up again. So anytime you need a break, that's where we can have a stained interlude.
Stained interlude. I'm a little upset you didn't sing it, though.
Well, it depends if we want it to be incognito, but I think people will pick up on it pretty quick.
At first, I legitimately thought that you were like having a stroke.
Evan, are you okay?
Like the first line, I was like, does this make sense? And then you kept going, I was like,
And it's been a while.
It's been a while.
It's been a while. All right, stained interlude complete.
Okay, so back to Flatwoods, part of Braxton County.
Yep.
Again, September 12th, 1952. We are zooming in on Edward May. He is a 13-year-old boy, his brother Fred May, and two of their friends, Neil Nunnally and Ronnie Schaefer. They were all roughly anywhere from 8 to 13 years old.
8 to 13... and then it was Neil Nunnally.
Yeah, Nunnally.
And who was the other
and
friend?
And then the last one is Ronnie Schaefer.
Ronnie Schaefer. All right. So I always have to write these names down or they will evaporate.
They are playing at the park in Flatwoods. And at about 7:15, they see a large, bright, fiery object streak across the sky.
Okay.
So they're just playing hopscotch.
Four square.
So they're playing all their games and they see this fiery object streak across the sky. And obviously that's going to catch their attention. So they stare at it and they notice it goes overhead. And then because they're sort of in a valley, there's hills and mountains around them.
Yeah.
They see it sort of disappear near a hill that is on what was the Bailey Fisher farm.
Okay.
That's the property that it seems to have landed on or crash landed. This is one of those points where I'm trying to figure out the telephone game. So some places say it appeared to crash on top of the hill. Other places say it appeared to slow down, sort of orient itself, and then land on the hill.
Okay.
Picture like a spaceship in like Star Wars where it like flies in and then orients and then slowly goes down.
Right.
And so one of those two things appears to have happened.
So there was no like explosion once it hit, just the fireball kind of went out.
They could still see like light and stuff emitting from that area.
So it didn't like land and like go into a billion pieces.
No, it didn't like break apart.
Okay. Gotcha.
They said they could see the thing streaking across the sky, red, orange in color. It had some flames shooting out of it and it was making a loud roaring or whooshing sound.
Okay.
And again, this was 7:15 p.m.
Yeah.
And that is important because sunset that night was 7:36 p.m.
That was going to be my next question. Yeah, is what time of year it was for daylight. Yeah.
So September 7:36 p.m. was the sunset time. Now, if you look this up, a lot of places are going to say this whole thing happened after the sundown, which is not accurate. I looked up the sunset time for Flatwoods, West Virginia on like the United States Navy website or something, some sort of like official database for this stuff. And it lists the sunset time as 6:36, but it has a, like a star at the bottom of this chart that says that it does not account for daylight savings time. And so if you were to just look at the chart, you're going to be like, oh, the sunset at 6:36.
Yeah.
But if you read the note, you notice we actually need to spring forward an hour. And so sunset was 7:36 that night.
Why would they not account for that?
I don't know. They're lazy. I don't know.
The whole U.S. Navy's running like an hour behind everything. Oh, dude, I thought we had so much time.
I think it's just in like these records that they hold of sunset times in various places.
Or it's like maritime.
So they see this thing streaking across the sky, 7:15 p.m. Sunset is 7:36 p.m. And civil twilight lasts until 8:06 p.m.
Civil twilight is...
Civil twilight is kind of the time, because I think we talked about it previously. Like if sunset is 7:36 and you go outside at 7:37, you're not going to be like, oh, it's dark out.
Okay, yeah.
And so civil twilight, that is the time when you would be like, okay, it is nighttime. And that would be 8:06.
So still, it would have been light for a hot minute when they saw this thing. Yeah.
And that's going to be important when we get into like the sighting and the description and all of that.
Okay.
So 7:36. Now I know the moment everyone's been waiting for, including yourself. Do you know what's coming right now?
It's been a while. No, I don't. Should I?
Moon phase
moon
that
phases.
Night.
Oh, I was going to ask it a minute ago, but the sun threw me.
It's true. So I looked up the moon phase just because I was feeling nostalgic for something that happened 6 months ago. And the moon that night was, drum roll, a waning crescent.
Oh, okay. That's our first crescent, I think. We've been full gibbous.
We've been gibbousing a lot lately.
Gibbous up. Been gibbous up.
We've been giving big gibbous energy.
Very damn gibbous.
As the Gen Zs say.
So, wait, so moon was waning
crescent.
Waning crescent.
It is not relevant in any way, shape, or form to this story.
The fans want it, dude. That's what they come here for.
I know. I'm going to give the fans what they want. They want moon phases. I'm going to give them to them. It's not relevant because the moon rise that night wasn't until late in the night / early morning. The moon was not out at any point during this event.
And, well, I guess it doesn't really matter, but waning is when it's going away, right?
Yeah.
Just think of the Ninja Turtles, wax on. Wait, that doesn't.
Karate Kid, wax on, wax off.
But for some reason, I thought they would say like wane off.
Wax on, wane off.
Wane off. That's just what my Uncle Wayne would say when he would leave.
Wane off.
Wane off. We kiss two fingers and raise them to the sky.
Pour out a shot of whiskey just because.
Yeah. I'm going to go with my Uncle Wayne, who does not exist for Halloween, because I already like this guy already.
If we ever go on tour, like take this show on the road, we're going to have to hire actors to just play all these roles.
Play all these characters.
We're going to have somebody playing Ottoman. We're going to have Uncle Wayne now. We're going to have somebody being John Teeter.
The casting call for Ottoman, I'm not seeing a whole lot of callbacks. Like you're like, oh, you know what? I want to play a human piece of furniture.
the pay is nothing. Maybe a foot long sum.
You still owe me for mixology classes. I must stress that.
Yeah, must have mixology experience. Okay, so 7:15, they see this thing shooting across the sky. And obviously, these kids are like, oh my God, we got to go see what this is all about. So very quickly, they start just taking off towards the crash/landing site.
Okay.
They start going up the hill and... on their way up the hill, they said that they started experiencing a really pungent metallic smell. And they said it was kind of like burning rubber or sulfur, like a really bad smell they started smelling.
Okay.
And they said their eyes and throat started to get a little bit irritated. So they get frightened by all of this. And they do what kids do and they run home. And Ed and Fred May, they run to their home and they tell their mom, Kathleen, about this whole thing.
Okay.
They tell their mom, hey, mom, we saw a giant fireball shooting across the sky.
Now my throat hurts. Like,
we
what?
Ran up there and there was a terrible smell and everything. And Kathleen is initially like, oh, this doesn't sound like a great situation.
Yeah. Also like that it's Ed and Fred. Like they just were so lazy in naming these kids. Like Ed came first. Like, I don't know. Just Fred.
Fred. Researching this, I couldn't help but think about Ed, Ed, and Eddie. Do you remember that show?
Yeah.
That show was wild.
Didn't one of them had a friend that was like a plank of wood or...
Yeah, Plank. Plank
over there. The aptly named Plank.
Yeah. All those shows just had pieces of wood that were friends. Like, Ed, Ed, and Eddie had Plank, and then the Angry Beavers had Stump.
And, that, well, it's not quite wood, but Cow and Chicken, the parents were just feet that were upright on the screen. Cartoons were really wild now. Back, I guess they're kind of weird now too, but I feel like they were especially weird in Nicktoons 90s era.
Yeah, explains a lot. So Kathleen May, she's initially like, this doesn't sound all that great, but Kathleen, I feel a little bit of like a kindred spirit with Kathleen because her curiosity got the best of her. She's like, I gotta go investigate this UFO. So
like coming with like blood red eyes, I can't breathe. She's like, I know where I'm going, straight to the crash site.
She's like, get your shoes back on.
Stop crying.
We're going back over there. But she's a little unnerved about it. And so I think maybe next door neighbor, or I don't really know where this person came from, but a kid by the name of Gene Lemon, he agrees to go with her and the kids. He's 17 years old. He is a member of the National Guard, and he takes with him a flashlight and a .22 rifle.
Which they don't pack that much of a punch, those.
No.
That's like a very small caliber.
Yeah, it's probably just like all he had. Again, nowhere I could read about this was like, oh yeah, she went next door and asked, hey, Gene, do you want to go? Or like, he happened to be at the house also. I don't know where Gene came from.
Ooh, I know where he came from. So is there a Mr. May?
Not that I could find. I don't know where the dad was. So Gene Lemon agrees to go and they all start going back up the hill.
Right.
By now, it's about 7:40. So the sun has just gone below the horizon. So 7:40, 7:45, they start going back up the hill. They notice that pungent smell is still there, kind of rubbery, kind of sulfury. They said that they could see a pulsating red light through the trees. And as they got even closer, there was a thick white mist or fog hugging along the ground.
Okay.
So there's some sort of dense mist on the ground. This is another point. I could not figure out which direction they were going, east or west, because when you look this up in most places, it's going to say that they were heading west up a mountain, like towards the sunset. And so if that happens, then everything that they see is going to be backlit.
Right.
This is why the sunset time was important to me, because they're experiencing this when it's still some light outside. And so if they're heading west, it's going to be backlit.
You mean like they'll be silhouetted, like detail would be harder to make out?
I would think so, right? And so if they're heading west, then that's the case. But I watched a documentary by, I want to get this right, Small Town Monsters on YouTube. If you look up Small Town Monsters Flatwoods, you can find it. It's like a 45-minute documentary. They went to Flatwoods. They interviewed Ed and Fred May. They interviewed some of the other folks. And one thing that they said in that documentary, one guy was talking about where all this happened, and he said the kids went down what is now Depot Street. And so I looked up Depot Street in Flatwoods, and that would have the whole group of them traveling east. So if they were going east, then the whatever light was left would be hitting the thing in the face.
Yeah.
And so I don't know which direction they were going, but
we say the thing. So they come up to this crash.
Yeah. I'm going to talk about the monster. Like, that's the next thing they cover. But I just want to make it clear that depending on which way they were going could have a big impact on how much detail they were able to see.
Yeah.
And I just don't know which way they were going.
Yeah. Gotcha. So is this game of telephone? I mean, is this just different friends who talk to them about their experience? Like, how did their story come to be known?
So again, this was at a time when like UFO sightings were like a thing.
Yeah.
They end up calling the authorities and everything, like you'll see.
Okay.
And so the story kind of gets out there, and then some experts show up, and it gets investigated and so on and so forth. And then it becomes national news.
Okay.
And so newspapers are reporting, and they're using other newspapers as their sources. And the people who actually experienced the sighting kind of were like, yeah, we don't want to talk about this anymore. And so they just kind of let the media run with it.
Or the media is going to be like, we're not going to go out into the middle of nowhere just to cover a story that's already been covered. Instead, we'll just kind of...
Yeah. We'll just, you know,
make our own spin on the story. Yeah, yeah.
Potentially sensationalize it a little bit, you know, throw in some white lies here and there.
Yeah.
I'm doing my best with keeping it to the facts, but, you know.
No, I appreciate that, because I was just curious how their story was conveyed and where that breakage in factual would happen, but that makes sense.
And so, at long last, they're going up. There's this weird fog on the ground. There's a really metallic smell. And Gene is using the flashlight.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's sort of scanning the area in front of them. And then he catches a large humanoid figure. They estimated that this was 7 to 10 feet tall. And I've read as high as 12 feet tall.
It's a big boy. We're being
very tall. They said it had a dark, non-reflective body. And the witnesses pretty consistently said that it appeared metallic or mechanical, not so much that it was a biological being. So it seemed to be like a 7 to 10 foot tall mechanical humanoid figure.
Okay.
Think about the Ace of Spades.
Yeah.
But flip it upside down. They said that's what the face and head looked like.
Mm-hmm.
It had large glowing orange eyes. It had either no mouth or a very small mouth. And sort of the same thing with the arms. It either had no arms or just very small claw-like arms.
I'm only laughing because now a picture that you sent me is...
It makes sense now, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that picture that I sent you is... It was one of the first artist renditions of the Flatwoods Monster.
Usually the like Sam the Sandown Clown... Weird, but also just like, well, that's kind of an interesting character.
Yeah.
This one picture drawing of it, whatever, is like weirdly haunting to me.
Yeah. And the one that I sent you is like the original drawing, but they like superimposed it over a forest scene.
Yeah, over a photo.
And then I tried to send you another picture, but it only sent like a tiny little thing.
It's a .avif file, which I've
I don't know what that is. I'm probably sending you viruses. So that picture, what it's supposed to be, is Kathleen May and Gene Lemon standing next to the original photo of the thing.
Okay. I can see that despite being the size a quarter of a postage stamp.
Yeah, so small or no mouth, small or no arms. And again, it was metallic. It appeared kind of armored. Instead of the legs, it was sort of described as having sort of like a cone of metal, almost like almost a skirt type of situation.
Okay.
And if you look at pictures that people have drawn of it in popular culture now, it's sort of developed having a red face. I don't know that any of the witnesses said that it had a red face, but...
I guess the red glowing eyes, maybe it's just like some light spilling out.
Orange glowing eyes. We'll come back to that. Yeah. And they said that as soon as the light hit this thing, because I can't even say creature or being necessarily, because they were pretty consistent, like more so like robot, I guess would be the best way to explain it.
Yeah.
As soon as the flashlight shined at it, it started emitting a really loud hissing or screeching sound. And they said that the hissing screeching sound was like pressurized steam being let off.
Mm-hmm.
So again, like a mechanical type of thing.
Yeah.
And as soon as the flashlight hits it, it starts gliding towards them.
Oh, okay.
So not walking. Again, legs aren't there, but it starts gliding towards them. And immediately, Gene Lemon drops the flashlight and everybody starts taking off down the hill.
Yeah.
It's kind of a split second thing. This flashlight hits this thing. They're all like, oh, curse words.
That is how they swore in the 50s and 60s.
So then they all start taking off down the hill.
That's your Stranger Things moment, though. Even has the B movie like, oh, they dropped the flashlight. Then somebody's going to trip over like a root.
Well, that's my next note is that Kathleen, at one point, she is so terrified. She jumps a 6-foot fence.
Oh, snap.
And then collapses and has to be helped up to run. And that note is from the documentary that interviewed Ed and Fred, her sons.
Okay.
They kind of jokingly were like, our mom was athletic, but she wasn't that athletic.
To hurdle a 6-foot fence in full sprint.
The panic of this moment, she hurdled a 6-foot fence.
Yeah.
So they run down the hill, and then that's when we get to that point that you were talking about where this story starts to take off. Around 8 p.m., they call the authorities, they call the sheriff's office. Something's going on. We need somebody out here. There's this thing in the woods and it approached us. We need somebody to come out here and check out what's going on. And so the sheriff's department and the sheriff himself were actually already responding to a completely different incident of a plane going down. And so when they got this call, they thought that the people were calling about that plane crash that they were already responding to.
Is there a way they knew that that wasn't what they were responding to?
Well, Kathleen, I think, went further in explaining like, no, you're not responding to this. It literally just happened. And we ran down here and called you all. So the sheriff said, OK, once we're done with that other aircraft situation, we'll come check your aircraft situation out. The sheriff just sort of assumed it was a downed aircraft. I don't think he was really getting the idea that there was some being in the woods that was floating at these people. And so eventually the local sheriff's department responds to the Flatwoods Monster. Are you good? You're frozen now in this video.
I think I lost you.
Is this? I can't hear you. I think this. Can you hear me now?
I'm hearing every fourth word.
Wait, are we there? Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Yeah.
Okay. I think this part of the story is just cursed.
I know. Maybe when I think I texted you, my sister, while I was editing this, I was like, I'm hearing like a dragging sound outside on the wall. And then like all the file got corrupted probably is when that happened.
Was that legit? Were you actually hearing something outside?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, it was like 3 knocks and then like a slide. Oh. But I kept trying to pull out my phone to record it and then it would stop. And I was like, it's fine.
3 knocks is a mocking of the Trinity.
Nice. Jesus is haunting me. Is that what that is? You need to pray more.
No, it's a demon. They're mocking Jesus.
Oh, a mocking. Sorry. Yeah, I guess Jesus would be like self-owning.
A mocking of the Trinity. That's like a thing, like ghost hunting shows. If they hear 3 knocks, they'll very dramatically be like, 3 knocks, a mocking of the Trinity.
And then I'm on the couch like, what? Do they mean Jesus?
Yeah. All right.
Okay.
I was literally just like, I just kept talking about the Flatwoods Monster. And then I looked up and you're just like, frozen.
I asked a question earlier and then there was like a 10 second gap. I was like, I think he heard this question like 30 seconds past when I was asking this. So anyway, we're off to a good start.
All right. So eventually the sheriff's office responds to Flatwoods to explore what's going on there. They did have multiple residents send in reports about a bright flaming object flying through the sky and descending from the sky. Once the deputies got on site and like actually went up the hill to where all these people were saying, or Kathleen, the children, what's the other guy's name? Gene?
Yeah, Gene Lemon.
Gene Lemon.
I like, every time I hear it, I give a little giggle. Gene Lemon.
Gene Lemon. His brother Gene Lime.
Together they make a great pair.
For some reason in this family, the last name is what changes. It's
Gene Lemon, Gene Lime, Gene Grapefruit.
Gene Grapefruit. Gene Palmella.
The whole citrus family. Yeah.
So once the police actually get to the site, they find no wreckage. So there's no downed aircraft. There's no parts of a UFO. There's no machinery. They don't find any fire, no debris of any kind. They don't see any strange figure that's floating around. They did say that there was a lingering odor. Mm-hmm. And they could see where the ground had been disturbed, where the alleged UFO craft, whatever it was, landed.
And the kids and family did mention an odor too, right?
So, yeah.
Like burnt rubber kind of?
Yeah, like a burnt rubber metallic smell is what they reported. And so the police said, we did smell something like that.
Yeah.
And we could see where like something was going on the ground. But they kind of just left it at that and said, there's nothing we can do about this. There's nothing there right now. So as long as everybody's safe, that's kind of that.
Yeah.
Another point of trying to figure out what's true and what's not with this story. Some places report that the National Guard themselves came to Flatwoods to try and investigate this case. One place I read said like 100 National Guardsmen showed up to like investigate the Bailey Fisher farm and try and figure out what was going on. Mm-hmm. I don't think that ever happened. I don't think the National Guard ever actually came on site and investigated. I think a lot of that was just telephone game from news reporting.
Yeah.
Because of Gene Lemon being a National Guardsman.
Okay.
They kind of had that detail, and just from report after report after report, it became the National Guard investigated this case. But I don't think that actually happened.
I feel like we need to do a FOIA request. Hey, does Gene Lemon work there? Is that how those work?
Hey, do y'all got any files on the Flatwoods Monster?
Oh, honey, I got it right here on my desk. It's my favorite file. The Lemon Files.
The Lemon Files. There we go. That'll be our spinoff podcast.
That's the adult one. That's the after hours.
Okay. I'm picturing where this podcast is going to go. Eventually,
yeah,
we'll have enough listens where we open up a Patreon.
Yeah.
Now, we've already discussed the Patreon. Just the name of the group is going to be titled The Moose Hole. But I think the series within The Moose Hole should be called The Lemon Files.
And I think the tagline should be, go make you pucker.
Go make you pucker. And the theme song for that, us just somehow taking all citrus fruits and turning them into some sort of jingle.
Yeah.
A lemon, a lime, a grapefruit.
On a vine, living together, it's the Lemon Files.
We got something here.
We got a 1950s hit show on our hands.
I don't know what we'll cover in the Lemon Files, but...
That'll be our animated thing. We've been talking about making a cartoon or
something. Oh, yeah. The Lemon Files. That would be good.
Yeah.
So that kind of ends the story. That sort of concludes everything that happened on the day of the incident with the Flatwoods Monster. Now, we sort of transition into conclusions.
Yes.
And so... I think we talked about this, maybe we didn't, but the story just sort of gets out naturally because it's kind of a wild story. Mm-hmm. As we talked about, sci-fi was becoming a popular genre.
Right.
UFOs, saucers were a popular thing. And so once, you know, the local newspaper runs it, then other newspapers in West Virginia start running it. And then it becomes national news and people all over the country start hearing about the Flatwoods Monster. And, mm-hmm. But this isn't a case like with the Dover Demon where an expert just happens upon the story and then it becomes this big story.
Right.
This just sort of came out, became national news, and then it started drawing attention from investigators and other people. Mm-hmm. We'll sort of transition now into some conclusions that different people have made about this case. And we sort of have three different categories of conclusions.
All right. Yeah, let's hear it.
The first one is the U.S. Air Force. I know we have talked about Project Blue Book.
Yeah.
So this is another case that Project Blue Book investigated along with Kelly Hopkinsville Goblins.
Yeah. So enough weight to at least get their attention.
Yeah. So one of those, what was it, like 10,000 cases they investigated? Something like that. The Flatwoods Monster is one of those. And again, you can't get the whole file from Project Blue Book. You just sort of get a one-line conclusion about what was going on. Like the Kelly Hopkinsville Goblins, the Project Blue Book conclusion was just hoax.
So remind me, is this like a published book or is it just a euphemism for...
It's a euphemism. It's not an actual book. It was just the name of the government operation.
Oh, to go look at this case, come back. Here's the bullet point conclusion.
Yeah, so Project Blue Book went out and investigated any UFO alien reports they could get their hands on. And they did full investigations into each of the cases. But all that has been publicly released is their like one line conclusion for each case.
Okay. They distill it down to as brief as possible.
Yeah. But... So presumably somewhere out there, there are multiple pages of the report on the Flatwoods Monster, mm-hmm. but all we can easily obtain is their conclusion.
Right.
And so the conclusion that they came to for the Flatwoods Monster was that it was explained by a meteor and an owl
colliding in midair.
You know, recently, like 3 days ago, do you remember, you know, Fabio?
Yeah.
Do you remember his visit to Busch Gardens?
Of course.
And what happened there?
I'm trying to remember which roller coaster he was going down.
Apollo's Chariot.
Apollo's Chariot, which is great. Highly recommend it.
Yeah.
But it moves pretty fast. I think at one time was like the fastest suspended coaster or something along those lines. But he's going down the hill at like, I don't know, 300 miles an hour. And a bird flies in the path of his
face.
Cart. Yeah. Or his face. Yeah, both. And I think he needed like reconstructive facial surgery because he just like face plants this dove at like Mach 2.
It was a goose.
Oh, a goose?
Yeah, it was a goose.
It's even worse. Yeah. So that's not a great time.
Yeah. So the Project Blue Book thinks that the Flatwoods Monster is explained by a meteor and an owl. You said colliding in midair.
Yeah.
Also, Fabio collided with a goose in midair.
So instead of go, it should have been go.
Yeah. But we don't really know how they came to that conclusion. But that was enough to draw the interest of a man named Ivan T. Sanderson.
Nice. I like a good letter in the middle.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's how you know they're really an expert.
Right?
What do you think the T stands for?
Terminator.
Nice.
So Ivan Terminator Sanderson, he was one of the like early cryptozoologists.
Okay.
He didn't create the term cryptozoology, but a lot of people credit him with making it a popular thing. Like bringing it into the mainstream and talking about it.
Becoming a respected field.
I wouldn't necessarily say respected.
Oh, no.
I don't think that cryptozoology is respected even now. But like he's, you know, if you really wanted to trace back the origins of things, I don't think it's outrageous to say that he's the reason why like Bigfoot shows or ghost hunting shows exist today. He sort of gave those subjects an outlet and kind of popularized studying these things.
Okay.
After Project Blue Book did their thing, Ivan T. Sanderson was like, well, let me investigate because that sounds ridiculous, a meteor and an owl. So let me go and try and figure all this out. Mm-hmm. And he was quoted as saying, the Flatwoods Monster incident remains a singular case where multiple independent witnesses experienced visual, auditory, and physical phenomenon simultaneously, all pointing toward the presence of a being or object outside our known natural world.
So he buys it.
Oh, yeah, he buys it. Now, that I don't think is saying a whole lot because he probably bought every single story that was brought to him. You know, he was really into it. He was excited about this stuff. I think we have to weigh his opinions equally with a skeptic's opinions because a skeptic, everything is going to be fake with him. He's going to take it at face value. So he specifically refuted the owl and the meteor. An owl didn't explain the height of the figure.
Yeah, it was like 9 to 15, depending on who you asked. Yeah,
and you know, if you saw a 9-foot owl, that's a cryptid in and of its own. So the height and bulk of the figure doesn't fit with an owl.
Right.
The odor that they smelled, you know, I'm sure owls can be smelly, but they're not going to smell like burnt rubber and machinery.
Nor would meteorite, right? Meteorite, right?
So Project Blue Book, the assumption is they're not saying that a meteor and an owl collided with each other. Presumably, what they're saying is that the meteor explains the flash of light and fire going overhead and appearing to land on the hillside. And then when the group of people went up the hillside, they saw an owl and interpreted it as this figure and then kind of put the two together in their head.
That's how you pictured it when you read that?
Yeah.
Okay, so just me. I pictured this like...
Wait, that wasn't a joke when you said an owl and a meteor colliding?
Yeah, I thought the two came together and then, you know, that could explain why the owl was taller. It was like melted into the meteorite.
That sounds like something out of Animorphs. You remember Animorphs?
I remember the book covers. I don't think I ever actually read one, but...
I like bought a few of those books solely so I could flip through them and see the little character change at the bottom. I don't think I ever actually read them.
It was holographic, right? Or no? It was like a little... A little young boy on the bottom left, and then the top right would be like a beaver. And then you'd be like, okay, I'm in.
But like flipping through the book, like page one, it's just a little boy in the bottom corner. And then the last page of the book, it would be the beaver in the corner.
Oh, like a little thumbnail?
Yeah, like a little thumbnail on the bottom of the page, of every single page. And as you read the book, the boy would transform into the beaver on the last page. And so I wouldn't even read the books. I would just flip them like a flip book to just watch him transform into a beaver.
So you'd be like, Mom, I need Scholastic money. It's very important. I got to see boy become beaver.
I got to get my Lamborghini poster and I got to get my Animorphs.
I was a Testarossa kind of guy, but yeah, I feel it. Yeah, isn't it amazing what you can get money for? And you're like, it's for books. And then you go there and buy like everything that wasn't a book.
So the reason he's saying it could not possibly be a meteor is because it doesn't explain there being an entity up on the hill, right? If a meteor just flew over, the owl's not just going to jump off the meteor and land on the ground. Right. And it's also not going to explain the witnesses seeing it land on the hillside. It's not going to explain them saying like, hey, it slowed down and either crashed or landed on this hillside. A meteor is just going to continue to fly overhead. It's not going to just stop.
Yeah, from what I remember you saying, this thing, in a way you were saying, was like a Star Wars ship, comes in for a landing almost, orients to the ground, settles down into it.
Yeah.
So a little more intentional.
Yeah, a little more calculated.
Versus crashing into the ground.
And if a meteor had crashed into the ground, then it would have been more than the police saying, yeah, we could see a little bit of the ground disturbed. Like there would be, even if it was a small meteor, right? Like a Joe Dirt sized meteor, a Boeing bomb. Gotta get the click in there.
You say the peanut.
Dead giveaway.
1% of the audience is gonna love that.
So he also noted that Kathleen May, Jean Lemon, and her sons seem to be credible witnesses. They didn't seem like the people that would just run up a hill to fabricate a story. He believed the story they were telling him. And he included the case in one of his books that's titled Mysterious Humanoids and Cryptids of North America. And his conclusion was that it is a classic high strangeness event.
Classic.
And so those two happened in pretty quick proximity to 1952 when the case happened. Project Blue Book came through and then Ivan T. Sanderson came through. Mm-hmm. And then we fast forward all the way to the year 2000 and...
Sorry, I was just, yeah. Okay, sorry, you're a little behind. I was wondering where you're at.
I'm here. And we meet Joe Nickel. Joe Nickel is a famous skeptic. He is someone who does the complete opposite of Ivan T. Sanderson.
We talking N-I-C-H-O-L or Nickel like the coin?
N-I-C-K-E-L-L. So extra L.
Oh, okay. He a fancy boy.
He's a Buffalo Nickel. That's a thing, I think.
Sure.
Joe Nickel, he researches various events with the purpose of disproving them. He's coming from the complete opposite side of Sanderson.
So he's the foil for the Terminator Sanderson.
He, obviously, is going to side with Project Blue Book and say that it was a meteor and an owl. He says that the bright light flashing through the sky is just obviously a meteor. There's no reason to believe it was anything else. Mm-hmm. If you see something bright streaking across the sky, that's what it's going to be.
I love how assured they are for something they can't see or have no like visual recreation of.
They did not witness this. And then as far as the barn owl goes,
yeah,
he said specifically that it was a barn owl perched on a branch that was 7, 8, 9 feet up in the air. And so when the flashlight hit the owl just right, you got the eye shine, and they saw that at a height that would be consistent with how tall they said the thing was.
Gotcha.
So he's saying it was an owl up in a tree. We'll get into the size of barn owls in a minute. They're nocturnal, so that would have been awake around dusk. They're known for their high-pitched screeches that match the witness descriptions.
Well, so I feel like eyeshine comes up a lot.
Yeah.
Is there any indication of what that means? Or is it just
what color eyeshine?
Yeah, does that give you any certain traits or anything like that? Like, that seems to be a quantifying factor for cryptids that's come up.
The eyeshine color does determine when the creature can go and redeem their hole in one for a ticket at Putt-Putt.
And the cryptids with orange eyes are like, dude,
come on.
Are you going to go get our scratcher card?
I want my 20 free tokens.
Enjoy your pizza, hole.
So he says some of the things that could have contributed to it appearing to be 7 to 10 feet tall or so are, one, the darkness. It's harder to guesstimate heights of things in the dark, I guess. Mm-hmm. They were on a hill, so the terrain was sloping, so that might cause something.
Yeah.
And he said it was also possible that while the owl was up on a branch, there could have been a small tree or bush or something underneath the branch that made it look like the body of the figure.
Okay.
So you had the owl, the whole owl essentially appearing as the head, and then a bush or tree or shrubbery.
A shrubbery!
Appearing as the body.
Yeah. And do you picture an owl's head as an inverse spade?
So the owl's face or head altogether as one thing does not look like an upside down spade, but the barn owl's markings on its face do look like an upside down spade. If that makes sense, like it has white markings on the face that are in the shape of an upside down spade. The other thing is that owls fly silently. And so when they said that this thing started floating towards them, they wouldn't have heard any flapping of wings or anything like that. And so it would, if you were looking at an owl and you knew it was an owl,
yeah,
and you saw that owl start flying towards you, it would kind of appear like the owl just started floating towards you, because there's no sound that it's making when that happens.
I feel like you also said there was a like a tea kettle sound or like a...
Okay, so let's get into descriptors about barn owls. I sent you the picture that we talked about earlier. I also sent you two, I think, like YouTube shorts of barn owl noises.
Yeah.
So play those. And if you're listening to this, think in your brain, could I misinterpret these noises as mechanical steam noises? So whenever you're ready.
Yeah, here's the first one. Jess is down the hall like, I'm so glad they started this podcast. So I also have a second one. Do you want to
play the second one?
So here's the second example. Okay.
So those are actual barn owls making those noises.
Yeah.
It's not outrageous to me that someone would hear that and think like machinery, steam pressure being released. Those things are in the same realm for me.
I'm curious to hear what you think, because I don't think I have a good rational way to explain this one.
So this case, my thoughts on this case go back to something that you and probably most of the listeners heard me discuss, and you were like, why does this guy care so much about this specific detail? Mm-hmm. And it goes back to which direction they were looking. The reason I harped on that so long is because my conclusions about this case hinge on which way they were going. Because I think if they were looking west, mm-hmm. and this whole scene, like we said, was backlit, and you can't really see many details, and it's all just a big silhouette, mm-hmm. then I could see you shine that flashlight at this owl. Because the light from your flashlight is there, you get the eye shine, but everything else is just a black silhouette. And maybe it's up on the branch. Maybe there is like a small evergreen or something under it. But again, you're just seeing a sort of a black blob.
I like that.
And then you hear shrieking and the owl starts coming towards you. And again, this sighting couldn't have been more than 10, 15 seconds.
You're not going to stand there and be like, I wonder if it's going to keep coming my way.
Right. Like 10, 15 seconds at most before he drops that flashlight and everybody starts running.
Yeah.
So I think if they were looking west and this thing was backlit by what remaining sunlight there was, mm-hmm. I think owl actually does make a lot of sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the reverse of that, if they were looking east and the light would have been on this thing showing more detail, then I don't see a group of six people, even four of them being kids, seeing an owl on a tree limb with some shrubbery underneath it and misinterpreting that as a 10-foot tall robot that's defending a UFO.
Well, and maybe the fact that he was using a flashlight shows you they were going towards the one direction where it's more silhouetted, because if you can just see it, you don't have the need to shine a giant beam of light on it. You would be like, oh, it's an owl or whatever. But that is a good point.
Yeah, if you're still just seeing enough.
Yeah.
So that's where my mind is at. Based on the direction of the sun.
Yeah.
And so if they were able to see a lot of detail, I don't see them mistaking an owl on a branch with some sort of plant underneath it as a 10-foot tall robot.
Yeah.
But if the way they were looking, you can't, because it's just a silhouette, I think the owl thing lines up enough that you might be able to explain it.
Or just the light's shining on mostly its face, and then you just see that part moving, and that's what you're dialed in on.
Yeah.
I think maybe I or you or we have mentioned before, like, eyewitness testimony is very flawed, not very accurate.
Yeah.
Because you're just like hopped up on adrenaline. So like once you see that thing coming, it's a fight or flight. Let's get up out of here.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to stand and be like, well, is it actually, is it on the tree? Push under it? Or,
yeah.
No, per usual, I'm like, I think I have my explanation, but I don't know how to get there.
Yeah.
And then you have the ways to fill the gaps, which I hope is just research and not just me not... Because as you explain, I'm like, yeah. And then what?
The things that I can't explain for, I mean, maybe there was like a large meteor that shot overhead. I don't know, but I'm just like not even attempting to explain that. Mm-hmm. And then something you brought up, like the metallic, mechanical robot look of this thing isn't explained at all. I don't think a silhouette could look robotic, maybe.
So one place I did go with that thinking is, again, with like government testing. I think that came up in Dyatlov, maybe another one. Everything then was so experimental. I think that's why we had flying saucers back then. Just were like, hey, centrifugal force. If we just spin an astronaut in the sky, everything will be mm-hmm. fine. So think of how an astronaut looks. Like we have to kind of deck them out for what they might experience, right?
Uh-huh.
So we're putting you in an experimental ship with, I don't know, new jet fuel we're trying out, or just like you're surrounded by explosives. How do we try and protect this Air Force person or whatever it would be called at the time? But we need this research to figure out XYZ technology. How do we protect you from what you might encounter and give you the best chance?
Okay.
So experimental suits for experimental aircraft.
So you're saying possible person in a suit.
Yeah. And they'll be a little larger than life because, you know, the tech wasn't super lean and mean. Think about Batman in the first Batman film. I used to like,
oh, yeah.
Turn all his. So very robotic because like that was what they had to work with at the time.
Okay.
So I'm seeing a suit to try and protect a soldier under a probably pretty hardcore NDA from what he may experience if this thing crashes and burns.
Okay. So either owl, robot, or man in suit?
Yeah.
Yeah, this is a tough one because, again, the briefness of the encounter.
Yeah, not much follow-up from anybody but Joe Nickel.
Yeah, if they had sat there for a few minutes and stared at this thing, then we might know a little bit more. But
so what took Joe Nickel so long to go out to look at this one?
Well, he was probably a baby when it happened.
Well, why is he so lazy?
Let me look up how old Joe Nickel is. Ottoman?
Well, because you were saying he called out Dover Demon, and I was trying to remember what year that was.
Joe Nickel in 1952 would have been 8 years old.
A prodigy.
So he was 56 when he investigated in the year 2000. And RIP, he passed away March 4th of 2025. Thank you, Ottoman, for your service.
And then just leaves the room. Ottoman's basically a cryptid at this point that we don't pay.
That's a good spin on things.
Like a living piece of furniture.
Our intern / researcher is a cryptid. There we go.
And I just never knew because I never knew what a cryptid was. And he also wears pants or something really simple.
What?
Like he dresses like a human, but he's also living furniture.
I never knew he was a cryptid because he wears pants.
That's all it takes to fool me.
I'm enjoying the slow trickle of Ottoman lore that we have going on this podcast.
We need an episode where he has his own spinoff episode that he hosts.
I'm switching gears completely, but I gotta just mention that I drove by Chesterfield Meadows Shopping Center and I saw a man on a horse.
But could you see secondarily, man tossing salad?
There was a point in time when we were like looking at the sign, like I was with you, mm-hmm. and you were explaining to me where everything was for this chef making a salad.
He's standing in a big salad, like it's a huge.
I remember I could see it for like a split second.
That's all I need.
But it hasn't come back. It hasn't come back.
Did you take your glasses off?
No, I just because I can't see anything without that.
I mean, that's where I was coming in. I was like, man, let's go to Ucrops. They probably have a pretty good salad.
We need to investigate Chesterfield, Virginia's first cryptid, the salad tosser.
That might be for Oddity Archive After Dark.
We'll do that one after dark. Well, any final thoughts on the Flatwoods Monster?
I mean, I think you're right. Just like the brevity of researching what happened afterward, or investigating is probably a better word. It seemed like it was so quick. The time period seemed like there's also a lot of this going on. So how and where they would decide to investigate the stuff, I imagine was pretty selective. So I wish we knew a little more, and I wish we could trust Joe Nickel a little more, but he seems very just like, that's probably just, yeah,
it's out. Yeah.
But I think seeing the owl and hearing that sound effect, I could see how, to your point, being silhouetted, fight or flight, how you might just quickly see that and be like, I gotta get out of here. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is when I have a harder time poking holes in, because I just don't know that we have as much information as the others, and maybe that shouldn't be my goal. It should be, you know, maybe they saw what they saw.
This is one where it's a good story. You know, these kids are playing in the park, and then they see something fly overhead. I enjoy the story of it.
Yeah, me too. And I've tried to get better about. I always want like explanations for everything, but like,
yeah,
not being able to deeper dive into a theoretically factual event, I find far more frustrating than, you know, a story someone wrote. And like, I don't know how to end this movie. What happened?
Cut scene.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So I think recently, Flatwoods, West Virginia, I think for a long time, they didn't like do a whole lot with the Flatwoods Monster, but it's since become like the thing in the town. Mm-hmm. And so I think they've like in the past 15-20 years, they've started doing Flatwoods Monster Fest.
I mean, how do you not?
And so what I'm proposing we do is we go on a road trip.
Yeah.
And we hit the Flatwoods Monster Fest. We hit the Point Pleasant Mothman Festival.
Okay.
And then we go down to Kelly Green Days for the Kelly Hopkinsville Festival.
Did these time out in a logical way, or are we going to be on the road for like a... 7 months.
I have no idea. Yeah, this is maybe a 7 month long.
I'll put in some PTO at work. Like, hey, I've got to go to the Flatwoods Monster Festival.
I've got three festivals to go to. I'm going to be out for 7 to 8 months.
My boss comes out and I'm just painted green. Look, I'm really excited for this one. You're going to need to.
All right, folks. Reach out on Instagram. Comment. Follow. Send me messages, whatever you want. It's Oddity Archive Podcast. You can also email us, oddityarchivepodcast@gmail.com. I think I mentioned this early in the episode. We've done a few like different kinds of episodes. We did the cryptid quiz. We had our first encounter story. So if you have any opinions or thoughts on those types of episodes or something else you'd be interested in hearing, shoot us a message. Let us know what you guys enjoy listening to. Because, you know, we're just kind of throwing stuff at the wall and seeing what sticks. Any input, Evan?
I need everybody to reach into their pocket, pull that orange ball out, and wave it around because we're about to get in. About to get that hole in one, baby.
I am David Stuhldreher, creator and host. The show is edited by my co-host, Evan Miller. All original music created by Sean Bullock. You can follow him at Sean Bullock Video on Instagram. All original artwork done by Tanis. Follow her at Tanis Tattoos on Instagram as well. Thank you for listening.